The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, Justice for All. Amid a flurry of political activity, esteemed civil rights attorney Janae Nelson has taken the helm of the Legal Defense Fund. All of that made sense. It really gave me the information and the vocabulary to name what it was that I was seeing. And that's when I actually realized I think I want to pursue that. I want to be a lawyer. More recently, Nelson has seen our country become embroiled in a nearly decade-long battle to center historical and social truth. And she is focused on LDF's role in this challenge. How do we limit distortion and indoctrination, which is what is happening, through what we've been calling an anti-truth movement in our public schools and in workplaces and in other spaces? She asked. We know the primary target is our public school system. We saw this early on when President Trump issued an executive order limiting the teaching of diversity, equity, and inclusion in federally funded spaces. LDF has been pushing back. We brought a lawsuit challenging that executive order, and ultimately, the executive order was rescinded by President Biden, Nelson notes. But unfortunately, it's an aftermath. We've seen a deluge of laws across the country in 30 states where some form of a ban on the truth has been enacted to limit the teaching of history, to limit discussions about race and gender and inequity. Anything that makes people feel discomfort or distress or anxiety, if it weren't so dangerous, it would be laughable that these laws are part of a supposed modern-day democracy. I think they're among the biggest challenges that we're facing, in addition to efforts to limit our political power, in addition to deepening wealth gap, in addition to the ongoing fight for educational equity. As for what's next for LDF, under Nelson's direction, she is excited about the organization's new chapter. Working with the historic civil rights organization has been the journey of a lifetime, she says. It's been the most amazing professional endeavor that I could have ever hoped for. I think we are coming out of a period of transformation, and now we are in what I hope will be a period of great ascension, in which we can use the tools and resources that we have acquired, as well as the skills, the vision, all of it, to deeply transform Black communities and our democracy. Our country is at a crossroads in this moment, she adds. We can either create a new model of what it means to be a multiracial, multi-ethnic democracy that is inclusive, where power is shared, where there is an opportunity for everyone to thrive, or we can descend into authoritarianism, some state of being where we regress and we turn the clock backward. LDF's multi-generational and multi-ethnic staff reflects this vision. I'm not prepared in any way, shape, or form to even begin to think about turning the clock back, Nelson says. There's too much at stake. As we've already proven time and time again, when we advance the rights of Black people in this country, we advance America as a whole. We become a better country. We become a better example for the entire world. And that is my mission for our future. The next article is titled, Supporting Black Businesses at Essence. Senior Money and Careers Editor Kimberly Wilson shares her recommendations for Black businesses and vendors you should be on the lookout for WOW in NOLA. I can remember my first Essence Festival like it was yesterday. Nearly a decade ago, I descended upon the city of New Orleans, ready to party, see my favorite artist in concert, and soak up all that was unique about NOLA's culture and food. What I didn't know at the time was that I'd meet some of the most dynamic Black female entrepreneurs, business owners, and aspiring career women at every single turn. Some were the owners of restaurants and boutiques. Others were selling their merchandise at the convention center or hosting some of the weekend's most talked about events. As a young, awesome-struck 20-something, I found myself thinking, is this even real life? After that first year, attending the Essence Festival of Culture became a tradition long before my byline appeared in this magazine. Some might say I was already manifesting what would later be. The women I would meet year after year in New Orleans would become the building blocks not only of my personal business, but eventually of my career here at Black Girl Magic headquarters. My success story is the same as countless others, though we might manifest many different dreams, and it can be your story too, whether you're looking to meet the perfect investor to help fund your business, to sell out of your product inventory, or to get the word out about your next big idea. Because if you're looking to connect with a Black woman who's making moves, she's sure to be in New Orleans. But the best part is, you can support so many Black-owned businesses at the festival, from apparel, food, art, accessories, to creative services, and nearly everything in between. EFOC has played host to the largest gathering of Black-owned vendors in the country for almost 3 decades. You can imagine that after a pandemic hiatus, the excitement of Black business owners of seeing in person thousands upon thousands of consumers from communities eager to support them is boundless. Outside of the marketplace, the city also provides rich opportunities for people looking to put money into the local economy by patronizing Black businesses. Be sure to stop by restaurants such as D. Chase's and Little Dizzy Cafe. Visit Art Space, artist Journey Allen Gallery and Painting Studio, or even participate in a tour such as Second Line Tours or All About That Tour. The magic awaits you. Some of Kim's picks are the Lip Bar, liquid matte lipsticks, multi-purpose tinted skin conditioners, caffeine-infused concealers, all that and more has been created by Melissa Butler for the Lip Bar. Black Girl Sunscreen. While our melanin may be magic, it definitely needs the help of a few well-chosen products. Black Girl Sunscreen for the win. Slutty Vegan. The Atlanta-based restaurant chain is on its way to becoming a national brand. If you're looking to discover what the hype is all about, be sure to check them out. McBride Sisters Wine. Robin and Andrea, the founding siblings of McBride Sisters Wine Company, the largest Black-owned wine company in the U.S., have created an incredibly loyal and enthusiastic community of vino lovers. The Wellness Apothecary. These clean and natural personal care products will help you take self-care to the next level. These are some of Kim's picks that are personal faves slated to be at our vendor marketplace in the Big Easy. The next article is titled Continental Connection, Essence CEO Caroline Wanga explores how Black women function as chief executive officers of home, culture, and community, and focuses on helping Black women recognize the quote-unquote chief that already exists within them by introducing the chiefs who live among us. Tanzania's Samia Suluhu Hassan is the country's first female president and currently Africa's only female head of state. Her Excellency completed her bachelor's and postgraduate degrees in economics and public administration in schools in Tanzania and the United Kingdom. She later worked in the nonprofit sector before holding various non-governmental positions in Zanzibar. Deciding she wanted to create more impact by getting into politics, she was elected as a lawmaker in Zanzibar in 2000, before joining the National Parliament in 2010. As an avid supporter of women, Hassan moved up through the ranks, becoming a minister in the vice president's office and then rising to the vice presidency in 2015. Since she stepped into office in March 2021, following the passing of late President John Magufuli, she has been tasked with steering her country out of the economic and health crises that engulfed it during the global COVID-19 pandemic, while also boosting Tanzania's regional standing, which she has done with pride, courage, and conviction. Here, President Hassan, or Mama Samia, as she is affectionately called, shares lessons in leadership, global community, and creating impact. Caroline asks the question, who is Madam President? What do you want people to know about who you are as a person? President Hassan responded, I'm a woman from Tanzania, born in Zanzibar 62 years back. I'm fourth born in a family of 9 from my mother, but 15 kids from my father. I come from a very humble family. My father was a teacher, and my mother used to work at home with us. I am married with 4 kids, 3 sons and 1 daughter, and various grandkids. Caroline asked the question, you have talked about the role that your mother and father played, and your father being a teacher. What did your parents inspire in you? President Hassan responded, they brought us up following the African culture. We are all one. The whole family is one. No discrimination, whether you're a boy or a girl. We all had our responsibilities to take care of one another. My father was very strict with us to get our education, and most of us have at least gone to school. That's what my father and mother did for us. Caroline asked the question, you talk about the teaching of we are one and how we are collective. People of the African continent have been spread over the world over many centuries. So what does being one people look like? How do we operate as one, even if we're not all on the same continent? President Hassan responded, I've been hearing some of them looking for where they come from, and some of them have managed to follow science to know where their ancestors came from, to know their roots, being African and being one and having the need to know where they come from. That means as Africans, they want to go back home and operate as one. Wherever you are, as long as you are African and you meet a fellow African, you have to go and greet them. Even if you speak different languages, you need to say, hi, how are you? Where are you coming from? Caroline asked, I am so inspired. But I can also imagine you ran into barriers. What were some of those, and how did you work through them? President Hassan responded, "First, when I wanted to become a politician, from an activist background, I wasn't following the culture of my place. So when I went to the constituency asking for a vote, I had to try hard to educate them. That was challenge number one. But number two was that I was the first woman to ask for that position in my constituency. And they said, 'How come a woman is coming this way, asking to become a member of parliament? A woman? No way.' I had to campaign hard to tell them a woman could do the same job as a man can do. Then we have women counselors. Those are the ones I worked with," I said. "If they insult me, it's not just me, it's you. So we have to work hard, all of us. You have to work hard for me to go through, and then I'll get you through as well." And they did it. So it was women power. The next article is titled Black August and Radical Black Women. Charisse Burden Steele, PhD, Associate Professor of African American Studies at Wayne State University, starting this fall, shares why we commemorate Black freedom fighters every August and highlights the communist women who inspired her new book. Essence asks the question, what are the origins of Black August? Dr. Steele replied, Black August emerged from the August 21st coalitions, which were organized in the late 1970s to honor George Jackson, a political prisoner who was assassinated on August 21st. It also served as tribute to his brother, Jonathan, who was murdered on August 7th, 1970, and to Jeffrey Katori Golden, who was killed in San Quentin on August 1st, 1978. Black August expresses solidarity with these and other Black political prisoners and prisoners of war. It's supposed to be a month of sacrifice and self-discipline. From the outset, it was aimed at strengthening the Black freedom struggle within and beyond the walls of prisons. It is a commemoration, not a celebration. Mumia Abu Jamal, who was one of the longest-standing political prisoners, called Black August a month of injustice and divine justice, of repression and righteous rebellion, of individual and collective efforts to free the slave and break the chains that bind us. Essence asks the question, speaking of commemoration, your upcoming book, Organize, Fight, When Black Communist Women's Political Writing, which you're co-editing with Jody Dean, fills a large gap in the collection and recognition of works by Black communist women. In fact, it's the first historical work of its kind. Why do you think that gap has existed for so long? Dr. Staley responded, the only ones the United States probably hates as much as Black people is communist. That's just a historical fact. As I write elsewhere, knowledge or ideas of works that come from communist thinkers, writers, and artists are considered unworthy of study because the idea is that they are just propaganda or they're not objective. They are considered machinations of the Soviet Union or Moscow or of China or whoever else is the socialist enemy. When we have communist or radical figures, we either completely erase them or we try to sanitize them or liberalize them to take one aspect of their ideas but subsume the rest, or to read them into some type of liberal framework. In a similar way, Black people have been construed as not having any history worthy of study, any reason or rationality, and that is even more so for Black women. Essence asks the question, how do you expect a project focusing on Black communist women to be received? What sorts of preconceived notions do you think this book will challenge for people? Dr. Staley replied, I just want to say their names. There's Ella Baker, Charlotta Bass, Dorothy Burnham, Wilhelmina Burroughs, Grace T. Campbell, Alice Childress, Marvel Cook, Esther Cooper Jackson, Thelma Dale Perkins, Tyra Edwards, Vicki Garvin, Yvonne Gregory, Lorraine Hansberry, Dorothy Hunton, Claudia Jones, Maud White Katz, Louise Thompson Patterson, and S. Landa Good Robinson. I think that on the one hand, the book will be well received because most of these women, with the exception of Dorothy Burnham, are dead. Most people will read it as an aspect of intersectionality that has moved into the mainstream. But it is not intersectionality. For radical Black people, it will offer up new resources about capitalism, labor, anti-fascism, anti-imperialism, organizing, and a host of other themes. Or else, it will probably be like one of those banned booklets, I guess. In terms of what misconceptions this book may clear up, Marxism isn't some Eurocentric crap. Black women were driving theoretical innovations in the Communist Party and were at the forefront of organizing. They were giving input. They were going to Moscow, attending these international meetings, and contributing. They're not just dupes of Moscow. They understood that to have an actual analysis of the working class and an exploitation and imperialism, you had to engage the Negro question, period. So, triple oppression. They talk about being oppressed as workers, as Black people, as women. We often conflate Black women's intellectual traditions, rendering them monolithic. I emphasize the difference between triple oppression and intersectionality because they are two different political genealogies. This work shifts the focus to a less examined tradition and the anti-imperialist, internationalist, socialist women at its forefront. The next article is titled A Quiet Place, Inside the Sanctuary of Mara Brock Akil's Writer's Colony in Los Angeles, Historic West Adams Neighborhood. Throughout her 30-year career, Mara Brock Akil has prioritized making her workspace feel serene. So, when the screenwriter and producer who recently inked a lucrative deal with Netflix, finished designing her dream office in the West Adams neighborhood of Los Angeles last spring, she decided to open the Oasis-like space up to other writers so that they could tap into their creative energy as well. With the opening of her writer's colony through a pilot program launched last summer, Akil is offering artists a haven in which to work on projects, find their voice, connect with peers, and receive mentorship from her and Susie Fitzgerald, who is president of production and development at Akil's company, Story 27 Productions. We live in a day and age where everything is distracting, Akil says, noting that she struggled to work from home when the pandemic shuttered public workspaces, it can be hard to maintain the focus needed to devote to getting the work done and completing that script. The Writer's Colony offers an inspired, beautifully designed space that encourages the creator to stay in the chair and get what is in them out of themselves and onto the page. Akil strove to make an office for other scribes that is as welcoming as the space that she and her creative team occupy. Crafted by Tiffany Howell, founder of interior design agency Night Palm, the 2,300 square foot building's decor is inspired by the 1970s. Doused in warm tones of ivory, camel, rose, cognac, and chocolate brown, the area offers a sense of tranquility and calm in the fast-paced city. It's also filled with predominantly vintage pieces, as sustainability was a top priority for the screenwriter. Since launching her invitation-only writer's residency in July 2021, Akil has hosted three cohort groups of budding talent in her three-month program, during which participants focus on writing scripts. On a monthly basis, she also invites veteran talent from many different disciplines to work at the colony, including a singer-songwriter, Alice Smith, author and TV personality, Elaine Welteroth, and commentator and political strategist, Angela Rye. She views the Writer's Colony as an opportunity to continue lifting others as she climbs, a mission she has held on to throughout her years in the industry. "That's how I was served in this business," says Akil, who received guidance from people like Ralph Farquhar, Sarah Finney Johnson, Debbie Allen, Stan Latham, and Vida Spears early in her career. "Our program has an emphasis on community, sanctuary, space, and process," she explains. "It is different from a lot of other programs in that the transaction is not about appealing to an outside entity. The only requirement at the Writer's Colony is for the writer to transact with their own voice. From my own experience, I believe that once a writer knows their voice, they can then navigate their career from a place of confidence and clarity."
Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Ava Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.